Congratulations! You have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Lambcast. This is episode 721. I'm your host, Richard Kirkham, from Kirkham A Movie A Day. This week, we entered the twisted vision of action director Matthew Vaughn, the man behind the Kingsman franchise of spy films. Vaughn's return to the world of espionage with his newest film, Argyle. A reclusive author who writes espionage novels about a secret agent and a global spy syndicate realizes that the plot of her new book that she's writing starts to mirror real-world events in real time. Henry Cavill continues to audition for the role of James Bond, appearing for at least the third time in a spy film, this time as the embodiment of our author's fictional character. There's lots to talk about concerning this movie, and much of it will take us into spoiler territory, but we'll hold off on that and giving up any plot points for as long as we can. Our own spy agency has four agents ready to report for duty this week. Cat ladies always die alone, so will Lisa Leahy end up being chewed up by her own pet? Let's see.
You're darn right I will. They're lining up as we speak.
James Wilson of Blogging by Cinemalite, do you dance as well as you dress?
What do we always say? This too will pass.
Howard Kasner from Pop Art, do you even do the whirly bird?
Not for ages.
And finally, Hollywood consumer Amanda Kirkham comes home and she tells me herself over breakfast that French people give her the crepes. Welcome back, Amanda.
Happy to be here.
All right, we're going to start with some general thoughts about the film, and then we'll follow up with more details as we peel back the layers of this onion. Lisa, while I enjoy a delicious Greek coffee, why don't you start us off?
You know, I could use some good Greek coffee this morning. I don't know. I'm one of these people where I'm a little hit or miss on espionage films. And when this got started, I was into it. I was like, this is great. This is totally silly. I see what they're doing. I like the editing. I think this is fun. And then I got to a point where I went, this is getting a little long, which is kind of how I usually feel with espionage films. I think I should just probably stick with my guts on this. And it got to a point where I was kind of like, all right, checking my watch, checking the Run P app. How much more is left to this thing? I just got to a point where I was like, oh, I kind of wish it was as fun in the end as it was in the beginning. So I'm kind of in the middle with this one.
Somewhere in the middle, especially liking the opening section, but maybe a little iffy as it goes on. Uh-huh. Howard, are you iffy at all?
I think I'm generally in the same ballpark as Lisa Leahy. I went with my brother and sister-in-law, and as my brother said, it's a really silly film, but kind of fun. It does start showing problems in the second half. There are a couple of reasons why it does. I even got to the point where I thought, now what is the MacGuffin and why is it important and why is everybody after it? I don't know if I'm happy that flares and Nehru jackets are making a comeback. The flares don't work, but that Nehru jacket on Henry Cavill, I mean, yeah, I could see Nehru jackets coming back.
Did you own a Nehru jacket when you were younger, Howard?
Yes.
Those of us who went through the 60s probably all had that point in time when a Nehru jacket was the hot item, stylish as it was. I may even have a school picture taken in my Nehru jacket.
It just seems so warm and, like, restrictive. I feel like I'd be pulling it off my neck the whole time.
Amanda, I know how you feel about it, but why don't you tell everybody else how you feel about it?
I will agree with the assessment so far that there's halfway through it kind of falls off a little bit. However, I will say I was entertained the entire time. I thought it was hilarious. I think you can see some of the twists coming, but I was really looking forward to it. I had heard that there are a lot of twists and turns, so I was kind of expecting that there was going to be a twist every 20 minutes or so, which might have prepared me a little bit better. But no, I really enjoyed it, but I do agree that there's some, maybe some structural issues that I'm sure we'll get into.
Fair enough. And James, do you twist and shout?
I was shouting most of the time rather than twisting. The thing that sustained me through this entire mess was Sam Rockwell, who I always enjoy watching and who can always, in his performance, turn a silk purse from a sow's ear. He makes everything work, and he's great. I also liked Bryce Dallas Howard in this quite a bit. She was terrific. But the movie's a real mess, and you know, it's not what you would call a spy film, but an arch spy film, where they're basically you know, doing a spy fantasy, and my tolerance for that is only so high.
Well, my tolerance for those kinds of things is pretty high, actually. I enjoyed at least the first Austin Powers movie immensely, and when things get ridiculous, that's okay, because I'm all in on the ridiculous. I bought into a lot of the things that are going here just because I could tell from the very beginning that the tone of this movie was, we're going to go over the top on this, and we're just going to, you know, try everything. We're not even going to bother trying to make the CGI look really good. We're just going to make it look good enough for a fantasy. And so that's kind of the way I looked at the film, as a fantasy film. I do think it has a couple of interesting elements that steal from other of these kinds of films. Total Recall is the film that came to mind, because I think there is a very, you know, two or three big plot points that kind of connect with that. So they've lifted generously from that story. And, of course, it is a comic film. I think that, you know, some of the other films that he's done have been a lot tighter, and they work more effectively as real kind of espionage films, even though they are also over the top. The Kingsman movies especially are the example that I think of here. But they come across a little bit more, I don't know, substantive than this. This is basically one of those dessert kind of films. We're going to give you a bunch of frosting, put a little whipped cream on top of it, and then we're going to twirl it, some cherry flavoring around it to make it swirl. It doesn't really mean anything, but there were times when I just laughed out loud and enjoyed the heck out of it. And I know a lot of people that I've seen online have criticized a couple of sequences that come toward the end. Those are the sequences where I laughed the hardest. So we'll get into that once we cross our spoiler territory concepts. Speaking of concepts, Lisa, you say you're not really a fan of espionage films. I know that I did your show a couple of years ago that you did with your brother, and we talked about a James Bond film. Have you seen the other Kingsman films, the Matthew Vaughn films?
I've seen the first two, and I adore them.
Okay.
I think those are delightful. I think that Taron Egerton is amazing in general. I will never get over the fact that he was not even nominated for Rocket Man, but that's a different kind of film for an Oscar, because not only did he deserve it, he should have been nominated. But I love him in Kingsman. I think Colin Firth is hilarious in those films. I think the over-the-top chaos of those films is just a riot from start to finish. I disagree a little bit with James on this one. I actually thought Bryce Dallas Howard was one of the detriments to this one. But I'm with you, Richard, where you're talking about how great Sam Rockwell was. And I guess, Henry Cavill. I thought it was Sebastian Stan for the first half of the film. So, I mean, apparently the two of them have the same look, and I guess they're neither of them eye candy for me, because when I looked at the IMDb and I went, oh, no, never mind, that's not who I thought it was. And as far as I'm concerned, they're interchangeable, but I don't know. I like Kingsman very, very much.
Yeah, well, this is kind of from the same DNA, but it is an adjacent sibling, because it does take some of the silliness parts of those films and makes that the main focus of what's going on here. And Sam Rockwell is great. You know, by the way, any Sam Rockwell movie where he dances is worth seeing. And we get Sam Rockwell dancing a couple of times here, so you know, this is going to end up being a recommendation from me, but I'm going to agree that there are issues with the movie. James, you started to say something.
No, I was just talking about Sam Rockwell dancing, which you don't expect him to do.
Amanda, you have thoughts, I know, both about Sebastian Stan, Henry Cavill, and Sam Rockwell dancing.
All of those things. First of all, I can see the similarity between Sebastian Stan and Henry Cavill, but I'm a Sebastian Stan fan, so I...
Totally fair.
Yeah. but no, I can see those similarities. About the Sam Rockwell thing, I said multiple times leading into this, if we didn't get a dance scene from Sam Rockwell, I was going to be disappointed, because it feels like a necessity whenever he's in a movie. And I do actually feel like a couple of the scenes were like, hey, you're in this, we should have you like tap dance for 5 seconds. I literally on my Instagram post, I used a hashtag that I'm just here for Sam Rockwell. I'm a huge Sam Rockwell fan. I think he's the best part of the movie. I actually really liked Bryce Dallas Howard, so I'm going to disagree with Lisa and agree with James. I've always thought that she's very charming. I like her. I've liked pretty much everything I've seen her in. I thought she worked well in both of the sort of personalities that she has to play in the film. And I also just think she's gorgeous, and so it was nice to see her and Sam Rockwell also play off of each other. I think that they had pretty good chemistry, which is I was not necessarily expecting. But I thought that they both worked really well, and I thought her as the at the beginning, you know, I liked her sort of anxiety, introverted author persona, her cat lady persona. I thought that she played that very well. So I liked both her and Sam Rockwell in it.
I agree with you that she played the anxiety really, really well. I liked her as Ally Conway, Sally Condy, something like that. Actually, I think Ally Condy is an actual author, so my apologies. But I agree with you that, like, I love her normally. I think she's wonderful in pretty much everything she does. So, you know, seeing her, I was like, oh, good, I'm going to really enjoy this. It's just, there comes a point where she almost seems to me she got tired, and something just didn't feel right with her. But we can get into that stuff later. But I agree with, like, I've seen her do the action thing. I've seen her do the you know, one of my favorite Shyamalan films is Lady in the Water, and I will die on that hill. And she's wonderful in it. She's wonderful in The Village. You know, I think she's divine. But this, I don't know. Something didn't sit right with me.
She's done Shakespeare.
Well, she wasn't running in heels, at least, so I think we were, you know.
That was a nice touch. I was glad to see that.
Do you think she writes that into her contract now? I am not doing that again.
It seemed very deliberate. She literally pauses on screen to take off heels, and then the next time you see her, she's in, like, combat boots.
Yep.
Like,
I noticed that, too. Was that an editing issue or what? But, yeah.
No, I think...
Well, I did think... I was going to say, I think it was funny that she took off her high heels, but my first thought is, you're on stocking feet on a regular floor. You're going to be doing nothing but slipping and sliding on that floor. You probably should put your heels back on.
But, I have a comment to that, but I'm going to hold it for now.
Yeah, we got to save that slipping and sliding across the floor for later on.
Oh, yeah, that's something else. I'm talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
Earlier scene.
Howard, did you have any opinion about any of the performances in the film?
Yeah, I am not on team Howard. I don't think she needs to hold the movie together, and she just can't. I'm not as I can't remember all the films I've seen her in. I thought she was the best thing in The Village, the only good thing in The Village. I don't even remember her in the other Shyamalan film. She did the Jurassic Park films, didn't she?
Yeah.
And Jurassic World. Yeah.
And she just wasn't very good in those either. It's Sam Rockwell, the cat, and that supporting cast who just hold the movie. The cat is great, but the cat still can't quite steal the movie from Sam Rockwell, who was the one that really holds this movie together.
Did anybody else think that cat was ugly?
Yeah.
I think that's deliberate.
Yeah, but who cares?
Cats are an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Come on.
I did struggle a little bit with the CGI cat. I'm going, no, what about this? And I'm like, why am I reacting to the terrible CGI cat the way I am? I am such a cat lady. I just have to own it.
Well, I was talking about the CGI before, and I want to come back to that point for a second, because they don't really make a huge effort to make the CGI more realistic. There's an opening scene where Henry Cavill's version of the spy is chasing after the counter spy that he's after.
Mm-hmm.
And there are sequences in that they're lifted from like three of the Daniel Craig James Bond films, and they just don't seem real at all. They just seem like cartoons. And I'm going, mm-hmm. from the very beginning, okay, I get it. This is the cartoon version of the spy film that we're going to be getting. We're not going to worry about trying to sell the idea that there is real danger here, that any of this is supposed to be taken seriously. And I'm wondering if maybe that's just a deliberate choice to kind of keep us at a distance from the sense that this is something that we should be invested in from the character's point of view, and just instead enjoy the ridiculousness of what we're looking at.
Well, I think when we left, my brother said, I could see a lot of other films in this that he borrowed from. And I said, oh, you think? I mean, the whole film is just a pastiche of other films. But I think you're right. They didn't really want to go for realism when it came to the CGI. They wanted it to be not quite there, not quite realistic, well, to add to the humor and everything. I do have a pet peeve, but it's not very important. It's really unimportant, is the scene in the opening does not look like a scene in a book. And this happens a lot when someone's reading in a book and it turns into a movie, and I'm going, no, this isn't. This is a screenplay you're reading. It's not a book, but that's unimportant.
I'm going to back you on that, though. I had the same thought as a big reader. I'm like, this doesn't translate, but sure. Okay, I'll go with it.
Yeah, that's fine. One other thing about the acting is actually, I don't know how, but John Cena is much more interesting than Henry Cavill. I thought John Cena was hysterical.
Yeah,
I thought John Cena was hysterical, and he doesn't have much to do, which may contribute to that. But he always was a much better comedian than actor, and here it works just perfectly.
Well, we do have an interesting combination of secondary characters. You just mentioned John Cena is in the movie. He's got a part that, well, it kind of bounces back and forth between the fictional version, the supposed real version, and, you know, another way that we could be looking at this character. But we also have other characters that fall into this kind of situation, and I want to talk a little bit about them as well. We've got Catherine O'Hara shows up in this movie, and you know, from the trailers, you would think, oh, she's just, you know, kind of got this tangential supporting part, but it turns out it's a pretty substantial part of the story, and I thought she was great in the film. Very entertaining, funny, and also a little bit we'll say at some point dangerous. Like I said, I don't want to give away too much that's going on here, but it's one of those things that is part of the, if there is pleasure to be had in the film, part of the pleasures to be had in the film. And Bryan Cranston as the, you know, he's a stereotypical evil villain kind of character. I think that that's, I thought he was fine as well. Do you remember Richard Grant being in the movie?
Yes.
What did he have, 20 seconds of screen time?
Yeah.
I guess I don't remember offhand. Where was he?
He's the fictional head of the service that, you know, it turns out is part of the plot. Oh, my gosh, you know. But like I said, it's it's very thin when it comes to his presence in the movie.
I wonder how much got left on the cutting room floor.
Well, I don't think that, you know, like I said, it's kind of a fantasy sequence that we're dealing with there. And once we get past that opening section, we don't really come back to those issues. We go in a completely different direction. Some of the other people in the film, does anybody want to talk about those characters? I don't want to, like I said, give away too much, but we've got Ariana DeBose and Dua Lipa and Samuel Jackson. I think other people should take a shot at some of these characters as opposed to letting me yammer on.
I mean, I enjoyed I enjoyed seeing Catherine O'Hara and Brian Chance because, as you know, I didn't know they were in the movie. I didn't see the trailer. I didn't watch it. So seeing, you know, Bryan Cranston show up, I was happy with him. And then Catherine O'Hara, I was pure delighted. And unlike you, Richard, with what she was presented in the beginning, I knew there was no way that was it because it's Catherine O'Hara. Like any fool knows that you don't waste that kind of talent. And so I was like, all right, well, I know that's not it. So I'll just be patient and bide my time for it. And I thought they were amazing. Apparently Ariana DeBose is going to be my actor of the year because I've seen three 2024 films and she's in two of them. Yeah. So it was like, okay, she's apparently everywhere all of a sudden. And I thought she did pretty well here. She was kind of okay. I almost feel like with that kind of character, you want more because that character tends to be the one I really enjoy in these films. And I felt her part was kind of a little flat here. It almost was like, we need somebody interesting to get the young butts in the seats. Let's put this actress in. But I don't know. And as far as some of the other ones, you know, I'll defer to everyone else for that.
Well, I thought Samuel L. Jackson was fun playing Samuel L. Jackson.
As usual.
Which is why you cast him. You cast him to play Samuel L. Jackson. I think I agree with all that. I think the supporting cast is a lot of fun. I don't know his name, but he's this American actor who is in, who is relocated to England and is in a lot of English shows. He's one who, at the beginning, you know, we know what happens to him. I'm sort of looking at him and saying, I know that person. But he usually plays comic parts. I like the main assistant to, or the head of the, not that that's next to the main bad guy. Carlos, I think, was his name. I thought he was very good too.
Amanda, do you have thoughts on anybody else?
I mean, I think everybody's kind of said it. I was pleasantly surprised. It kind of felt like the casting was a little bit like the plotting of the movie. There was just, let's just drop this person in, and let's just drop this person in, and let's add something here and somebody here, and which I didn't mind. Like I said, I kind of liked all the twists and turns in the plot, so it was kind of fun to see different people show up at different times. I kind of just want to go see it again just to see all the cameos. But I especially really liked Bryan Cranston. I think he was chewing some scenery, and I enjoyed that. Same as Samuel L. Jackson. I think everybody kind of already said it. John Cena was another delightful addition.
All right. I think we've gotten to the point where we need to talk about the plot and some of the story points. So those of you who are listening and haven't seen the film yet and want to still enjoy the insane plot twists that happen in this movie, you should come back and listen to the rest of the show later, because we're going to cross the spoiler line right here and start engaging in some analysis concerning the story itself. And so I just want people to be aware of that. Who wants to go first?
Wow.
Was that you wanting to go first, James?
No.
I'll go first.
Okay.
I think many of us have said there's a problem with the second half. And that's where it's hard. And there are two problems with the second half. The first one is there's this incredibly long exposition dump where we're told everything and it goes on forever. And it's one of these where, you know, I'm not going to believe any of it as it is. So I'm not really sure you have to go into this much detail, because it's not going to be believable no matter how long you talk about it. But to add to that is there's three action scenes right in a row. There's no downtime between them. And it gets exhausting. And I think they either needed to put the exposition scenes or some of them between these and have downtime between them, or I could have lived without one of them and just had two of them at the end, something like that. Especially, as I said, I kind of forgot what the MacGuffin was and doesn't really know. The only other issue I have, and I had the same problem with The Kingsman, which is why I never really watched anymore, yeah, is the cavalier attitude toward death just gets to be a bit too much. There are just too many people being murdered in a fun and hysterical and comic way. And that's fine for a while, but there are so many here that finally I'm going, what is wrong with Matthew Vaughn? I think this is more about Matthew Vaughn than it does about anybody else. But I think there's structural issues in the second half. There's just why it starts seeming longer, because we stop having plot and we have exposition and we have fight scenes, which are not plot. A lot of people think fight scenes are plot, and they're not. There are things that happen during plot scenes that can be, during fight scenes that can be plot, but fight scenes themselves are not plot. And I think somehow they just thought, we'll just do all these fight scenes.
I've always had that problem with Matthew Vaughn, and it's the glee that he takes in the violence is really stomach churning to me. I always remember the scene from the first Kingsman movie of Colin Farrell going berserk in the
church.
And just
that
going,
was just, I went, what is going on here? We're supposed to be okay with it because they're extreme fundamentalist and charismatics and evangelicals, even though they've been taken on by somebody else. And I'm going, I'm not okay with this.
I'm not okay with this, even though I'm not crazy about, you know, their characters.
Right.
Which really, really turned me off. But I also got that sense from Kick-Ass. There are elements in his X-Men films of that, but restrained, probably due to the studio not wanting him to muck around with the characters so much. But there's always that sense that he turned the St. Valentine's Massacre into a musical, and it's for me, it's really off-putting, and there's always a level of violence to these movies, but he takes absolute glee in it that really upsets me. And, you know, I that's why I always approach Matthew Vaughn movies with this sense of, you know, I better not care too much about this because he's going to disappoint me.
Well, I tell you, it's definitely an issue of tone that you have to accept for these kinds of things, because from the very beginning, the notion that this is something that we should take seriously, if there's any sense that there are real consequences to here, then I could see, for instance, in that sequence in the first Kingsman, where you would just go, oh my gosh, how horrifying. The problem that I don't think it's a problem. The difference is that I'm looking at this like it's a cartoon.
Comedy.
Yeah. It's a comedy. It's not really a drama. We're dealing with characters that are caricatures, not real personalities. And so we're seeing the Tom and Jerry version of what a spy film would be without necessarily having to worry about the consequences of it. The truth is that I think, for example, I think you get the same problem with the Superman movie, since we got Henry Cavill in this. I'll mention that. You know, I think when we see the Superman movies from from 1978, we're looking at that and we're seeing a comic book movie that's done in a style that has a sense that this is a fun adventure. And even though there are potentially consequences to thousands of people, we still see it as being cartoony and about being fun. But in the Man of Steel, it's like I'm watching 9/11 happen repeatedly for 20 minutes in the last section of the film, and I'm going, that I could see as being disturbing. If you buy into the notion that this is ridiculous, then I think you can get past that. At least I could. And maybe I'm just a retrobate, you know, because Kick-Ass is like my favorite film of the 2000s. It is exactly as you described. It is reprehensible in the violence that it portrays by the characters that are doing it. It's horribly cruel, but I never perceive it that way because of the tone that I've got going into it. And the whole time I know that this is an exaggeration. I didn't have the reaction that you guys are having to this particular film in that way for the same reason. We get to the end and I'm sorry, when there's, you know, ice skating murder that's taking place in an oil slick, you just have to say, yeah, this is not really anything that I have to think about and feel bad about enjoying for the moment, because this is stupid. And Howard mentioned the big exposition dump. Here's the thing that I thought was a little bit problematic. When you get an exposition dump, don't you think things are supposed to clarify a little bit?
Yes, exactly. By the time it was over, I was going, now, what are we after, and what is it, and why is it important, and, you know, and this and that, and I'm going, I have no idea. But you're right.
Well, go ahead.
My sense was that we had the fictional world of Argyle, but we also have a plot to brainwash R. Kyle, and it's even more unbelievable than the fictionalized version of things. What they have to
do—that's
do
a good point.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of saying it.
it's totally unbelievable, and it would fall apart like a thread if they don't have, you know, Catherine O'Hara in the kitchen set, and if Bryan Cranston's character, who is clearly a sociopath, know, isn't convincing in the dad role. I mean, come on, give me a break. I mean, we can take the excuse of it's not meant to be believable. It's meant to be a lark, but it doesn't hold together. It's just a weak plotting and weak. It's we can get away with it because we're getting away with it, and it just made me wince.
I mean, obviously Bryan Cranston is a sociopath by the way he whacked Alfie off that kitchen island in the hotel room.
Well,
I mean, right there, I knew he was
a
sociopath.
I
thought that, like, maybe it's because I'm a late Gen X horror fan, but I do have to say I did not have the same reaction you guys did to the killings. Partly because, like, in Kingsman, he got my attention. Like, you had the bar, you had the church, and it was, oh my god, this is so over the top. And you get it. Like, you understand, oh, all right, we're going to fully commit to this thing. And I respect him for that, because if you're going to do it full tilt. Don't half-ass it. I thought this was a half-assed version. You know, the sequence when they're, you know, the ice skating on the oil slick, it was like, okay, Chekhov, I think you're tired of this now, too. Like, they kept pushing the ice skating. They had the little music box, and I was like, all right, clearly this is coming back. Oh, there it is. And then you had this silly hallway lair killing. I was like, I just didn't care. I was actually bored. I was like, all right, let's go already. Like, there were just too many times where it was like, wait, is she this or is she that? Is she this or is she, like, five different times? I don't need it five different times, because now I'm not engaged. Now I don't care. Now I just want it to end. You can't twist on the same character 15 times and expect us to stay with you, because now it's not exciting. Now it just seems like you can't make up your mind. And I thought that sort of thing was very disappointing. I didn't react to the deaths at all. In fact, my favorite parts were the sequence on the train with the crazy amount of editing that had to go into that. And I thought that was done really well. You know, where she blinks and she's seeing Henry Cavill's Argyle, and then she's seeing Sam Rockwell. And I thought all of that was really interesting. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, if the whole movie's like this, I'm in. This is great. I'm enjoying this far more than I thought I would. And then later on, where you've got three layers of who these people are, and they just kind of kept overlapping from one to the next to the next. You think about, So you have Henry Cavill and John Cena, like, in the boat, and then you've got Kira behind them, and then you've got, you know, all these different people, and there were just, each time they blinked, the edit was a different version, and I thought that was really exciting. But to take 2 hours and 15 minutes to get me there, you know, I was really rolling my eyes toward the end with the gas masks and that whole sequence. It was just like, okay, already, let's get going.
Amanda, I need to have your input on this right now.
Go for it.
Well, the gas dance gunfight battle was my favorite sequence. I was laughing the entire time and cheering, like, yes, this is what I came for. Get Sam Rockwell and Bryce Dallas Howard dancing and shooting a whole bunch of bad guys. Awesome. Oh, and we've got colorful gas to, like, make it all like cotton candy on the screen. I am there for it. I have a couple of other thoughts, though, from what's been said already. The violence thing, I kind of agree with Dad, what you said, and Lisa, what you kind of said. I like the first Kingsman. I bought into the fantasy thing. I'm a big Kick-Ass fan. I think it's interesting that we keep talking about Kingsman and the violence, because the first two are, I think, really that over-the-top kind of comic booky. And then the Kingsman, the sort of prequel, one of the reasons that I really liked that one was because it actually felt a little bit more realistic. And I think they, like, kind of toned it down a little bit. It was an interesting turn for that series. But I'm you know, I bought into this going into it, so I can see how if the violence is a thing that bothers you, obviously that's an issue, but it didn't bother me. I embraced it. I was there for all the creative ways that people could be killed. The ice skating thing was a little ridiculous, but I really liked some of the punches that ended up getting delivered from that. So the violence thing, I was okay with. I actually kind of, like I said, my favorite sequences were the over-the-top violent sequences. I don't know what that says about me. But one of the things that I wanted to kind of talk about, because we have all these twists and turns and all the believability things, and I do think when you get 3 or 4 twists in, is she really a double-crossing spy or a triple-crossing spy or whatever? One of the things that bothered me, and I don't know that it should have bothered me as much as it did, the main, like, henchman guy, he's the fan in the first sequence, the first scene with her reading the series. I don't understand the point of having him be there at her book reading, asking a question about her being a spy, if he's part of the group that has brainwashed her.
Yeah.
That was an inconsistency that I don't think that they thought through.
Did they think that, like, you know, she would break out of it and, like, leap over the rose to take him out or something? Like,
yeah,
it was so strange. Her?
Yeah, I mean, maybe there was a missing scene or something that was supposed to be like, hey, this was supposed to get her memory jogging about, you know, the next thing that they're looking for. But it just, it seemed like a kind of way to do a callback later on the train and have her go, oh, hey, you, I know you. But like I said, he was part of the, is it the directive or what's the
division, the directive?
Division or directive, yeah. So that seemed inconsistent. But I mean, like I said, I think I'm willing to forgive a lot of these things because I had so much fun with the movie. I really, really liked the train sequence too. I thought that was, I loved, Lisa, what you were saying, the blinking and the flash between Henry Cavill and Sam Rockwell. That was great. So I'm not like discounting any of the other criticisms of it being kind of a mess. I agree, it's a mess.
I think you make a lot of good points. I think in many ways the scene on the train is what is perhaps the strongest action scene. There are some issues with that. You're right, there is no reason to have this guy recognize her. And as the story goes on, you're also thinking there had to have been an easier way to kidnap her than what they're doing. Yeah. The whole thing, there had to be a much, much easier way. The issue I had later on with the opening train sequence, even though it was wonderfully directed and wonderfully edited, first is it looked like they were trying to kill her, and I'm going, no, you want to take her alive. But secondly, she takes the train at the very last minute, but somehow the directive has 20 agents in the neighborhood who can get on the train with her, even though they only have like 30 minutes, an hour's notice. And I'm going, okay,
I mean, I think they kind of explain that. I mean, not well, but I mean, one, she doesn't fly. Two, they've got her computer tapped. So they would have known that she was booking train tickets. Not that they're getting her a day's notice, certainly. But I don't know. I mean, instead of an hour, 30 minutes, maybe they've got 2 hours, 3 hours, something like that. I don't know.
They thought
they explained that away.
Yeah. But it is, it's a very good, it's probably the best sequence of violence as well, because I'm going, these are definitely bad people that Sam Rockwell has to protect her from. So none of the violence in that bothered me. And it was very well choreographed and very well directed and edited, though, as I said, I was confused because it looks like they're trying to kill her, and I'm going, no, you don't want to kill her. That defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah, I don't know that any of the plot is well thought out. I think they just said, well, what's the next thing that we can do that justifies getting to another action scene and advancing to the end of the movie? And if I think we've already figured out that if you go back and look at some of the things that they've done to get to this particular point, it doesn't really make any sense. But we're being asked to forgive it, this incoherence, because we're really, you know, supposed to be enjoying the cream center of this confection.
I'll hold my thought.
Okay.
Why? Don't hold it. We're into spoiler territory. There you go.
I was going to say something about a chocolate covered turd, but you know.
I mean.
No, that's okay.
Ahead.
I don't object to your description there. That's the way you see it. That's fine. Like I said, I think that the part that is turd-like is the whole silly plot that we're going through. The stuff that I'm enjoying is like the stuff that Amanda talked about. Look, you guys didn't. Lisa especially mentioned that she was bored by the fight sequence at the end with Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell in the hallway with the gas masks, and nobody seems to be particularly enamored of the ice skating on the oil. But to me, those were the most amusing sequences. They were intentionally silly and over the top, and I'm not supposed to care about anything else at the moment except seeing this visual stupidity in front of me. And I'm, you know, ignore the idiocy that got us to this point and just enjoy this moment.
And I agree with you on that, Richard. I don't think my opinion on this needs to be taken with a grain of salt, because I don't care for that kind of comedy ever. I don't care when you give it to me. You're going to get eye rolls from me because it's not really my thing. However, I'll laugh myself crazy through Barbarian, which was just as over the top and ridiculous. So it's just, for me to look at it and think that other people will also be bored is probably unlikely, simply because it's a thing with me in comedy, you know? And I had just gotten to a point by the time we got to that minute in the film that I was just done. I needed it to end already.
Well, speaking of ending, I'm not sure that it's ever going to end, because we have mid-title credit sequences and follow-ups that seem to be planting seeds. I understand that there are additional Argyle films being planned, and we get the sudden appearance of, I don't know, the fictional Argyle in real life. It's hard to tell what the hell is real in this damn movie.
and you know, so much. We're all saying the same thing, but in different places. I just didn't care. There's nothing. We're all basically saying the same thing, that there are things that bother us, but we're not supposed to care. Well, if we're not supposed to care,
why should we care?
why are we watching?
I mean, it's not really doing very well at the box office either, so I don't know if those future films will actually come to fruition at this point.
It's always hard to figure those things, you know. It's measuring it by the box office doesn't necessarily matter when we are talking about. Although this was released primarily to theaters, this is not one of those streaming platforms that's merely taking advantage of the box office. It is, in fact, they do give a damn about the box office here and the theatrical. So we'll see what happens with it. I don't know what will happen. It doesn't, like I said, it's I'm not sure how dependent on the financials they're going to be to follow up on these things. Of course, if Henry Cavill gets drafted to be James Bond, it may all just disappear.
I mean, I'm just kind of looking for comparison's sake. Night Swim did better at the theater than this has so far.
Ooh.
I mean, now to be fair, it's done. It's been out a little bit longer. It seems like it's gotten. I don't know. It's not looking great.
You know.
I mean, opening night, Night Swim made half what Argyle has made so far. So the crazy horror fans who will go see whatever you put in front of us showed up for that thing, and you want to talk about a chocolate covered turd. I don't know. I wonder what's going to happen here, because most of that money is going to go to all the salaries they had to pay for this thing.
Yeah.
Well, that money's already down the drain, so we don't have to worry about that. Mm. And since we're not the producers of the film, we don't have to worry about whether or not we can find more money to make more of these things. I do think there's some interesting tie-ins. I kind of enjoyed the concept that there is a connection to the Kingsman franchise suggested at the end of the film. I did see the little acknowledgement and the thank yous of to Statesman Whiskey, and I, like I said, I can see how they're trying to kind of connect all of these stories there. I'm probably not a fan of having to do all of that. I was iffy about the way all of these multiverses in other film franchises have tried to connect with one another, and I think that is maybe a mistake. Let's just do one thing at a time.
I agree with you.
But
yeah, let's have several franchises rather than tie them all together.
Yeah,
we don't have to connect all the multiverses.
All right. Well, yeah. I think we've drawn out our discussion of Argyle here as far as we need to. I'm not going to ask you guys to give me lamb scores, but I will ask you if you would have a recommendation for people to see it or not. So, Lisa, how would you say to your friends, you know, is this something that they would bother with, or that you would say to them, oh yeah, you should see this?
It's a good question. I think it depends on who's asking. I think my mother would get a kick out of it, and she'd be bored by the end. She'd probably only watch half of it. I think that people who like espionage films and like Austin Powers style things will probably enjoy it. It like I said, it depends on who it is, because that second half really is not great, and a lot of people kind of showed up on my Facebook post, and the people who showed up were not fans.
James, would you be, I don't think you would be giving a recommendation either way.
No. I will ask this, Richard. You said in your Facebook post that you'd been anticipating it for months.
Oh, yeah.
How big was the crash?
I like the film quite well, but it doesn't live up to my hopes. Look, I'm a big fan of Matthew Vaughn's films. Like I said earlier, Kick-Ass is, if I looked at the last 24 years of movies, I would say that would probably be, you know, one of my top three or four films in the last, you know, 2.5 decades. I just really enjoyed the hell out of it. Kingsman, I was anxious to see the sequels. I do think that they have stepped down each time a little bit, and that I think is problematic, and that's why it doesn't give me a whole lot of hope for this particular franchise. On the other hand, I'm glad it exists in the world, and I've enjoyed seeing it. Will I, you know, process it the same way on repeated occasions like I have done some of these other films? Probably not. So it doesn't quite meet my hope, but it didn't disappoint. It just, you know, I had high expectations, and I think my expectations are probably were unreasonable.
So it's on you.
Yeah, yeah. Howard, how about you? You're not going to be recommending this, or would you recommend it to people?
Yeah, I don't think I really would, especially at this time of year when we're still getting the prestige pictures for the Academy and things like that. But some of the things made me think that I really was anticipating this movie. because the preview is so good. So I would recommend the preview to everybody.
There you go, Lisa. You should have just watched the trailer.
Yeah. Well, this is an example of you don't know what you're going to see and you don't know what you're going to get. But I did get Catherine O'Hara and Bryan Cranston, and I didn't know that going in. So there's that.
Yeah. But actually, the preview makes you think it's a totally different movie than it is. The preview makes you think it's going to be this postmodern existential thing about someone who's writing a book and everything, and it starts coming true, when in reality, that's not it at all. It's a basically absurd story that has, you know, cause and effect in it. I mean, there was a movie with Emma Thompson and Will Ferrell where she's writing a book, and all of a sudden Will Ferrell is doing everything that's in the book. And the suggestion was going to be that, and then it wasn't. So I had to readjust myself really quick to realizing, no, this is not the way they're going. So from that perspective, it's a less interesting movie to me. But no, generally speaking, I would recommend the preview highly, but I probably would not recommend the movie.
Amanda, I know that you're going to recommend the movie.
So a couple thoughts. One, I would absolutely recommend the trailer as well, because it had the best song, and Suspicious Minds was nowhere in the movie, and I was a little bit disappointed by that. I was also really highly anticipating the film. Obviously, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I did kind of step back about a week before it was supposed to come out and said, okay, I'm gonna just not think about it. I'm going to calm myself down because I don't want to be disappointed. But I also think that my anticipation for it was such that I don't think I could have been disappointed, because I was expecting just the ridiculous show that we got. And I think actually in my review I said, I don't think I can call this a good movie, but I enjoyed the hell out of it.
That's most of my reviews for horror films, frankly.
Yeah
that's a perfectly good reaction. Yeah.
But I do have an interesting thought about who I would recommend it to and when I would recommend it. I agree with what everybody else has kind of said. It would, or I guess mostly just Lisa, it would depend on who I'm talking to partially, but I actually think, as much as I would want people to go see movies in a theater, this might be one of those that I would recommend as a streaming option. First of all, it is an Apple TV produced movie, so it's going to be there. But it's one that you can zone in and out of and still get enjoyment from. So it kind of, I feel, is perfectly made for streaming for somebody who's like, I just want to put something silly on in the background while I'm cooking or cleaning or whatever, which is sad because, like I said, I want people to go to the movies, and I think there are a lot of great sequences from it that are enhanced by seeing it in a theater on a big screen with surround sound. And hey, you know what? The audience that we went to see it with, it was basically a sold out show, and everybody was laughing their asses off and cheering along with it. So it was kind of a nice, you know, community experience. But I think that because of the plotting issues, it's one of those ones that might actually work a little bit better as something that you don't have to actively engage in as you're watching it.
Well, we're talking about the song being in the preview. Most people may know this, but the reason why you'll have music in the preview and a song in the preview that's not in the movie is because they make the preview so far ahead of the movie, of when it's scored, so they don't actually have the score or know what music they're going to use in the movie.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I just, like I said, I was hopeful.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot. I go, oh, that's great music that they're going, and then I go to the movie and say, oh, they didn't use any of that music.
Yeah, well, Suspicious Minds is my favorite Elvis song, and I actually really liked the remix they used, and I thought, oh, hey, and then they actually, in the movie, they're using a lot of remixes of sort of classic songs, so, but like I said, that's why I think you should also watch the trailer, but I would recommend the film, like I said, with the sort of footnote of it's stupid and silly, but a lot of fun. Don't pay too much attention to the plot.
Well, I think it's interesting that you're suggesting maybe it would work for people who are watching on streaming. One of the reasons I think that people should see a movie in a theater is because it forces you to engage in the movie, you know, to stay committed to what's going on, to follow the story, to care about what's happening. And as we've talked about, following this story is ridiculous, and caring about the characters isn't really the point. And so I do think that you've got a valid point here, that you can just put this on in the background. You wouldn't know what the hell was going on if you were cooking dinner and watching this, but that's okay, because sitting in the theater watching it, I'm not sure what the hell is going on, so it's not that different. And like I said, visually, there are a lot of things that are interesting in the film, that are fun. I recommend it because I'm a Matthew Vaughn completist, but I know that the world is not necessarily that way. So that's kind of the way we are going to go and finish off this discussion. Hey, there's a cat in there. you know, and I think maybe there's a tagline that comes up in the course of the film is an accurate description of the film itself. The greater the spy, the bigger the lie. We get a lot of big lies in this particular film, and you know, the biggest lie might be that trailer. So, well, I've got another hot date that I'm going to be going to, so we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and have our exit question of the week.
Hi, I'm Jason Soto.
And I'm Lisa Leahy.
And we're the host of Between the Scares, a podcast that takes a look at every movie that Blumhouse Productions has made. You may not recognize the name, but they have made some of your favorite horror movies like Paranormal Activity, Ouija, and Insidious.
Yeah, Jason, but they've also made stupid movies like The Fever and Best Night Ever and Hysterical Blindness.
Yeah, those two. But they also did Whiplash, Get Out, and Us, and we're going to cover it all.
Hey, did you know that Jason Blum also produced that Gem and the Holograms live-action movie?
He did that?
Uh-huh.
Ugh, fine. But then you have to watch The Green Inferno. So listen to Between the Scares on Anchor, Apple, Google, Amazon, or our home location at rabbitholepodcasts.com.
We've returned, and we haven't quite left the world of espionage yet, because our exit question of the week deals with that very issue. Since Argyle is a spy film, and we've talked frequently about some other spy films, particularly the Matthew Vaughn ones, in this discussion, it seemed completely appropriate to ask for some recommendations, but I had a different kind of twist on the recommendation. So the exit question is, what espionage film could you recommend to someone who does not like James Bond movies? And by the way, I don't want to know those people. So make
Unfortunately,
sure.
Unfortunately, you do, Richard. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, man.
I let you in on the show, and you're going.
I know.
You're going to finish that way. Oh, Lisa. So
you
we're going.
You knew this already.
Well, I knew that you didn't. Were not familiar. I didn't know that you were. You had distaste for them.
Sorry.
I don't remember it that way, but that's okay. I'm an old man. Memory is not my forte anymore. Well, once upon a time it was, but now it's just, you know, getting up and doing things on time.
I saw the question in the email, and I went, oh, just tag me next time, Richard.
So, Lisa, since you are in that situation, do you have an espionage film that you could recommend?
I mean, I feel like everybody should just basically recommend something to me. So the film that I always come up with first is The Conversation, and I love it. I don't know that it's the same kind of thing. But I really do think that film is so well done. And for something, you know, it's not the same tone as this, but as a spy film, I just remember it being so interesting and so tense, and everything just kind of falls into place. If you want something with a little comedy to it, I didn't hate Spy, that Melissa McCarthy film. I thought that was kind of silly. And you also had a pseudo cat lady in that, too.
I love that film. That was,
I thought it was funny.
Very entertaining.
I was surprised.
So that's what I'm going to go to with my two. I'm going to let the experts hack this one, because when I started looking up espionage movies and looking at the list, I was like, no, 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 no. And I'm like, wow, this is actually going to be a problem for me.
Howard, I was suspecting that you might have something that you would recommend.
Well, if you want to go for serious and more realistic espionages. I'm going to go ahead and recommend the Ipcress file with Michael Caine, which was made to many degrees, like Jean Le Carré books and films, an answer to James Bond about a lower level intelligence officer who's tapped to look into something. And there are a few twists along the way. Michael Caine is great in it. But if you're looking for comedy, France made a couple of films that were satire of James Bond. And I recommend OSS 117, Caro, Nest of Spies, and OSS 117, Lost in Rio, directed by Michael Hazanavicius, who did The Artist, and both starring Jean Valjean, who was also in The Artist. He's kind of he's not quite as bumbling as Maxwell Sparked, but he is kind of a bumbling, he doesn't have quite a sense of self-awareness or, relating to people, or he keeps making errors and such.
Those are all great. Thanks. The thing I love about the Ipcress file is it's a more serious spy movie, but the directing is hilarious because there always has to be some sort of obstacle that you're looking through throughout the whole movie. It's wonderful. I just love that movie.
Was that going to be your film that you were recommending, James? What's the one that you're going to recommend?
I thought Howard was going to start recommending Hitchcock's spy movies or Fritz Lang's spy movies, which are also really, really good. So things like Notorious and North by Northwest, those are classic spy films that also have Hitchcock twisting on the moral issues of just what a crummy business being a spy is. But the one I want to recommend is Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, which is the feature version. I'll recommend the TV miniseries as well with Alec Guinness.
Yes.
But
thanks for adding that, because I was going to add that. Yes.
But I was also surprised by the movie version, because I was surprised that they could turn it into a 2.5-hour movie and condense it so much and still make it really, really good. Gary Oldman plays an old former spy, George Smiley, who showed up in a lot of Le Carré books, and he's terrific in it. It's a really good movie, although recently in some Facebook random thing that popped up, it was listed as one of the most confusing movies ever made.
Yeah,
I just don't get.
If you go to the bathroom, you're going to be screwed, because there's something that happens that explains what's going on in that movie every 20 seconds. So you really have to pay attention. This is not one of those movies that you want to watch when you're sitting at home and the phone could ring, or somebody comes to the door, or the dog needs to be fed, or anything that's going to be a distraction, because if you're not paying attention, you will be completely confused. The Alec Guinness miniseries, I think, works because you get lots of time to figure out what's happening, and they've condensed it all down into 2.5 hours in the Gary Oldman film, which I loved, but which I legitimately remember thinking, if I had not been paying attention to every little thing in this, I would go, what, huh? I don't remember. Why did and I would have been very frustrated. So I understand those thoughts, but I think it's primarily based on the notion that you have to be engaged with that film. Amanda, did you think of something?
Yeah, I came with a couple. One, I wanted to say, echo earlier, that Spy was excellent. And actually, the first thing that popped into my mind after seeing this, because I felt like Argyle kind of wanted to be what Spy was, but wasn't quite as successful. But I have a couple of others, because I wasn't sure what people were going to recommend, so I had a couple prepared. One of which is The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is another Henry Cavill film, and I know that it wasn't as successful as it had hoped to be, but I think it's quite fun. I think that it's twisty enough, and it's really cool to look at, so I'd absolutely recommend that one. I am going to maybe twist myself a little bit in recommending my next one, because I'm going to recommend Captain America, The Winter Soldier, which I do think is a political thriller and spy film, and I get my Sebastian Stan recommendation in. But all of the stuff with the Nick Fury in that, and S.H.I.E.L.D. and investigating, that's all kind of that spy element, and a little bit, you get a little bit of the spy vibe, but in a superhero film, so people who maybe aren't necessarily into the spy films, but are into superheroes. And then the last one that I thought of was just the original Mission Impossible film. I'm a big fan of the film series, and I think they've really done a lot with it, and it's, for the most part, gotten better as we go along. The second one's a little iffy, but they've really become much more action films, but that first film is really more of the spy investigation. There are obviously are some really intense action sequences and cool special effects and things, but it's a little bit more, I feel like, in that investigative storyline.
It's a heist movie, disguised as a spy film.
Yeah, exactly.
I like those.
But we're recommending spy films to people who are not spy film fans. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
And my recommendation is one that kind of plays off of the twist in this particular film that we talked about today. This film involves some brainwashing, and my recommendation would be The Manchurian Candidate.
Oh, yes.
Yes. There's a film.
You know, which is a kind of a convoluted concept
don't
as well.
Watch the remake. Not the remake. No.
Not the remake.
Please, no.
The Frank Sinatra, the Lawrence Harvey version.
Angela Lansbury, yes.
Angela Lansbury and, Janet Leigh.
Janet Leigh, yes. That conversation between Frank Sinatra and Janet Leigh on the train is one of the strangest moments of dialogue I've ever encountered, and it was one of the things that made me love this movie. It's just weird.
Yeah, I did that as a scene. It is just bizarre.
But The Manchurian Candidate is preposterous, but it's not the preposterousness that we are getting in these other films. It's ground a little bit more in reality. It's certainly played like it's a real threat, and it's not a comedy at all, even though once in a while you do have some funny moments in the movie. It's not really designed to make us laugh. It's designed to thrill us, and I think there's a good thriller aspect in it. I think the Hitchcock films are also a good take on this. The twist that Amanda suggested with Captain America, I always forget that Captain America Winter Soldier is a spy film. And, people think it's a superhero film. But it's got the superheroes in it, but they're all engaged in a spy mission, basically, and that's what we have to uncover there. So I think you guys had a pretty good list of things here. And the conversation, it has Gene Hackman in it. So, Sam Rockwell justifies this movie, I think Gene Hackman justifies even a crappy movie like The Package.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter how bad the movie is, because you still get Gene Hackman.
It's made better if you get Gene Hackman. Like John Goodman, there are certain actors that make every movie better.
Every time I think about doing a post about actors that have never been nominated for an Academy Award, John Goodman is at the top of my list of somebody who has been so good in so many movies, and
every time
for some reason nobody has decided to hang a laurel on him and say, here's somebody who deserves a little bit of special attention. And I'm with you there, you know, absolutely. Well, that's been our conversation about Argyle. Some of you will be happy to know that we made even less sense of it after this hour discussion than they made in the 2 hours that you were watching the movie. That's okay. We've all got things to live for, and some people are going to live for smoke and mirrors, and others are going to live for something that's a little bit more grounded. Until next time, we're all going to stay grounded, but I am going to ask people to promote things that they have that they want to turn their eyes to. I'm going to ask James first, because we'll get by that very quickly. He never wants to talk about his stuff.
I never want to talk about my stuff. The blogging by Cinema Light Index is starting to be published week after week. So if you happen to be even interested at all, but just want to cut through the muck a little bit, there'll be a list of everything I've done.
Good deal. And it's cutting through the muck.
cutting through the muck.
Howard, I know pop art has always got something interesting and exciting, so what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, it hasn't changed much or at all since the last couple of times I was on, because I've gotten so far behind. But I will mention the most recent one is with Catherine Van Cyril, where we do Parasite and Lost Ceremony, two films where trying to find good help is not only hard but can be murder. And then Richard, and we're going to have to start deciding when we want to do this, is doing the Valentine's Day episode with us, where we're going to do Ghost and Truly, Madly, Deeply, where people you love never leave you, whether you want them to or not. I also mentioned that I was recently a guest on the Deep Blue Sea podcast with Jay Kluwit, where we talked the original mutiny on the Bounty with Charles Laughton and Clark Gable, and that next Sunday I'll be a guest on Todd Liebenau's something for Lanthrop. I can't remember what he's calling it, but we'll be discussing the killing of a sacred deer.
I literally watched Mutiny on the Bounty 48 hours ago. I'm going to have to watch your episode or listen to your episode and see what you guys had to say about it.
Lisa, we both liked it. So.
Lisa, I know that you've got a bucket load of things to promote, so feel free to share as many as you wish.
Kind of, sort of. So I'm going to basically say, check out Rabbit Hole Podcasts, our network run by the creative Jason Soto, who has all sorts of ideas for lots of many podcasts. So in anything you're looking for, you can find it there. You can catch me with Jason Soto on Between the Scares, during which we go one by one through all of Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions films. We just released Ouija, which was a terrible film, but at least we're in the horror films and not doing the horrible romance things he started with. You can also catch me hosting Pictures and Conversations, which is the Rabbit Hole Podcast's book club. And we release an episode on the 20th of every month. Last month, we talked about the 7.5 deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. And on February 20th, we will be releasing our discussion of the Poppy War. So tune in for that.
Very nice. Amanda, what have you got to promote?
Yes, I think I have one thing up on the blog right now. I have not been updating it very much, but... yeah, we're into February. I think it's still okay to promote my end of 2023 wrap-up of my most disappointing films and also my top 10. I only posted it 2 weeks ago, so that's up on Hollywood Consumer.
The year doesn't end until the Oscars are over.
There you go. I can keep promoting it till then.
That's it. That's it. You can just think, well... you know, the year, what have we got, another month until that happens, right? It's March. Does anybody remember when the Oscars went all the way to April?
Oh, gosh, no.
I remember I think it was 1974 is when they had the Oscars in April. That seemed a long way.
Unfortunately, Richard, I wouldn't have been able to remember that.
Same. Oh, you youngsters.
I racked my brain, and I'm like, what was that? And then you said the date, and I went, oh.
See, I was thinking like 2020 or something.
I have a great piece of Oscar trivia that I'll share real fast. It is the year when there was a tie for Best Actress between... Yes.
Barbara Streisand and
Katharine Hepburn for Lion and Winner.
Barbara Streisand
for Funny Girl. Barbara Streisand, this was her first film, but they made her a member of the Academy even before the film opened. And in order to be a tie, it had to be the exact same number of votes. So assuming that Barbara Streisand voted for herself, if she hadn't been allowed into the Academy, Katharine Hepburn would have won.
Outright.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, and there are arcane rules, so I'm not disputing that. I know that piece of trivia that you just talked about, and I think it's interesting. I do think I read somewhere that they do call it a tie if it's like within three votes, but they've changed the voting rules so much in the last 5 years that I doubt that those rules apply anymore.
No, that was in the 1930s, and that's how Wallace Ford tied with Frederick March because they were within three votes. But they eventually changed it where it had to be the exact number.
Good deal.
So, yeah.
All right. And
depending on if they read the winner correctly from the
envelope. Yeah, that always helps, if you get that, yeah. Got the right envelope and you're reading the right thing. Oh, poor Mr. Beatty.
Bonnie and Clyde, hey, they're still stealing.
Yeah.
And on my site, there'll be new reviews up of films that I've seen. Argyle will go up probably today or tomorrow. I'm going to see My Fair Lady, which is not a new film, but that's my evening viewing for this week. Going to a theater to see a screening of My Fair Lady, so I'll have some words and thoughts about that as well. I do have a game up there for everybody to play. I put up a birthday game, so if you are interested, you can go and watch a little video. There are 67 quotes from 67 movies, one from every year that I've been alive, even though I'm only 66, but I am alive for the additional year, so it counts. If you can name all 67 movies from the quotes, I'll give you some kind of prize. I don't know what it would be, but you might want to take a shot at that. Speaking of taking a shot, I think we had plenty of things shot at us by this particular film. We've all managed to duck them relatively well. Those of us who did take a shot in the heart, don't worry about it because we hit the right spot. It went right between the...
right through that tube, that...
The vascular corridor.
Thank you, yes. Right through that vascular corridor. I'm glad you remembered that phrase because I was not going
to
get it.
I hold on to it.
I'm just glad it wasn't a soft-nosed bullet or a crossbow.
the stuff that... Worked. It's okay. As I'm watching it, I'm going, okay, now is this the Colin Firth moment or is this the, there's going to be something that's going on here. Well, once again, we're back into spoilers for Argyle. Don't worry about it, folks. it doesn't matter that much. Don't be too confused. Come back and catch us next week on the Lambcast. Bye, everybody.
All right. Oh, no.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell! Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell. Oh, no. Go.
Then goats go to hell. Be careful, it could go off for like no reason.